This podcast was recorded Thursday, April 5th at 11 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like our governor might be back in Ohio.
All right, let's talk politics.
Welcome to Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly political podcast. We have talked a lot about Republicans in recent episodes, so this week we turn to the Democratic candidates for governor who had a feisty debate in Cleveland.
The GOP primary is still interesting, though. We'll talk about one candidate's million-dollar ad buy.
But first, we usually wait till later in the show to get to this, but we're leading with it this week. John Kasich, GPS.
Ohio, Governor Kasich, welcome back to Meet the Press.
Thanks, Chuck.
Governor, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Rockville, isn't this close to Bethesda?
We went to Tulsa instead of where we were going in Colorado.
I think I've eaten my way across the entire state of New York.
Ground control to Major Tom, help me.
Our governor was back in, where else? New Hampshire, a state synonymous with presidential politics, but he was still being coy about his plans for 2020.
Let's begin with the question that's on everyone's mind. Governor Kasich, are you running for president?
I don't know what I'm going to do.
Count us among those skeptical about whether the governor really knows if he's going to run. Anyway, joining us now on Skype is Ethan DeWitt. He's a reporter with the Concord Monitor newspaper. He also spoke to Governor Kasich while he was in New Hampshire. Thanks for your time, sir.
Thanks for having me.
What kind of reception would you say Governor Kasich received?
Well, so the official party is being muted, as they sort of have to be. But he did get a fairly big reception when he spoke that evening at one of our colleges. And there seems to be a sense from some that he could appeal to some of the older, whiter, working class voters in the party. But it still remains to be seen. There was a poll that actually came out the night before he arrived in the state that suggested that he had a decent chance. He was within 6 points percentage-wise to the president if there were a head-to-head matchup in New Hampshire. The president had 48% of New Hampshire Republicans, and he had 42%. So there are some positive signs for him, but it's a ways off, and I wouldn't say there's anything solid yet.
Now, Trump beat him by more than 2-1 margin in 2016. Yes, John Kasich finished second, and he claimed victory. But it wasn't even close. How popular is Donald Trump in New Hampshire, especially among Republicans?
The president still has high approval ratings among the party within the state, if you look at just individual approval ratings, presidential approval ratings. So that is a high bar. And it is true that the governor of Ohio, when he came, he kind of touted that second place finish. It's one reason why he has come back to the state three times without making an announcement about his 2020 plans, but it's right. It was a very distant second place.
You wrote about how John Kasich was quoting philosophers, talking about the meaning of life while he was speaking to your newspaper's editorial board. That's something he did in his last State of the State address here. What else did he say of interest to the editorial board?
Sure. So just to expand on that a little bit, he went cerebral after kind of quickly dispatching the question of whether he was running again. He kind of wanted to talk more about the national mood, and he was talking about this sort of lack of political discourse. He was talking about he was saying that he called it a war mentality, and he also kind of spoke to some of the trends in media, saying that we're in a post-truth reality. I don't know how much of that came up in his State of the State, but it's something that he seemed eager to push in lieu of actually making an announcement. And he was saying that, you know, as the country divides, we asked him, you know, does that mean that the country is not ready for a middle-of-the-road moderate candidate? And he seemed to reject that. He seemed to think that there was an appetite right now for a unifier. And he didn't really step forward as the one to do that, but he seemed to think that there was interest around the country and in New Hampshire for somebody who can bring people together, which is, sort of a tried trope when it comes to campaigning in the state.
His philosophizing got some eye rolls here in Ohio. I mean, it was his last State of the State address. And, you know, when you're a lame duck governor, you don't really do a whole lot in your last State of the State. But he really kind of went really kind of far out there, quoting all those philosophers and being very cerebral. Was there any eye rolling in New Hampshire when he in your group when he started doing that?
Well, I'm not exactly sure how that part of it went down, but I thought one thing that was interesting is when he was talking about the national mood, he took pains, actually. He went out of his way to talk about the Parkland shooting, and I know that there's some legislation that he's pushing through in Ohio that you guys obviously know about to do with reforming gun laws. That's something that in New Hampshire there hasn't been nearly as much of an appetite for in the legislature. We have had no significant gun control bills make it through our legislature, and one bill that would have expanded gun-free zones or allowed for gun-free zones in the state, that failed.
Ethan, there's no appetite here either. Did he mention that?
He didn't bring that up, no.
Because, you know, he's touting this. I mean, maybe he's had a change of heart, but he has signed every pro-gun piece of legislation that's come before him as governor, including laws that allow concealed carry weapons in bars and daycare centers. Did he say that he's had a change of heart? Did anyone ask him about that?
I don't think anyone directly asked him about that. But when I mentioned Parkland, I think he was bringing that up in the context of, again, this whole idea, this national mood and this movement. And I asked him, you know, the Parkland shooting, if you trace that trajectory of how that's played out, it kind of disproves in some ways the thesis that, there is an appetite to come together, because if you look at how that's been polarized, it's really taken a turn since there was all the activism in the beginning with the students. And he said that he doesn't think that's true. He says it's not black and white. He says that the country is clearly listening to the students, and that this is something, and the legislation that's going through Ohio is something that he said at the time would have support. And he said that kind of speaks to the kind of leadership and the kind of decision-making that we need in a president.
Governor Kasich has not been the only Republican in New Hampshire. Outgoing Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona was also there recently. This is all a contest to run second to President Trump at this point, if any of them do plan on running against him. Who are some other candidates or some other names of note that you're seeing pop up in New Hampshire lately?
Well, those are the two that have kind of been most public so far. To speak to Senator Flake, the same poll that came out Monday night, which could spell trouble for both Senator Flake and Governor Kasich, it found that on a head-to-head matchup with Trump, that Kasich was 6 points behind Trump. But if you put that into a three-way race with Flake, Kasich only got 34% of the vote to Trump's 51%, and Flake got 4%. So it's kind of the same narrative going, when you look at the last primary of the challengers to Trump kind of dividing the vote. And we asked him whether he would do anything differently this time around if he were in another primary challenge in New Hampshire. Would he change the strategy? He now knows what he's dealing with. He now knows how the rest of the primary played out around the country, and he said no. He said he wouldn't change anything. He said that other candidates in the field in 2016 decided to jump into the mud pit, and he characterized himself as not doing that, and he said that he would repeat that pattern again.
Ethan, how receptive are New Hampshire, in particular New Hampshire Republicans, to a challenge to a sitting president? I think back to 1992 when Pat Buchanan challenged then President George H.W. Bush, and Pat Buchanan finished second in 92, but it severely damaged President Bush's reelection hopes. What's the thinking this time around?
I think everybody is sort of waiting and watching very carefully, at least publicly, in public statements. One of the things that the governor said that I think was pretty illustrative of his mood is he was talking about basketball. He made a lot of basketball metaphors, and one thing he said is that the best place to be on a basketball court is near the rim. And he sort of characterizes that's his wait and see mentality right now. He's waiting to see what happens around the rim, and if the ball heads towards him, you know, he's going to try to play it.
Did anybody point out that, you know, John Kasich is kind of short, and to be near the rim, it'd be tough to go against the taller candidate?
Nobody directly pointed that, but the basketball metaphors were rife.
It is a good metaphor. his height notwithstanding.
Ethan DeWitt is a reporter with the Concord Monitor newspaper. Their editorial board visited with Governor John Kasich when he was in New Hampshire this week. Ethan, thanks again.
Thank you.
As we said at the top of the show, things are getting feisty in the Democratic race for governor.
Yeah, no name-calling like we're seeing in the GOP primary, but the two frontrunners, Richard Cordray and Dennis Kucinich, went after each other pretty hard at a debate. It was in front of the Cleveland Plain Dealer editorial board. Cordray went after Kucinich for his tenure as Cleveland mayor, during which time the city declared bankruptcy. Kucinich accused Cordray of abandoning his post when he quit as director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to run for governor.
What you've done exactly is hand over to the Trump administration the keys to the Consumer Finance Protection Board with devastating effect for working class people in neighborhoods like where I live and for poor people. There are five payday lenders who have cheated millions of people out of billions of dollars, and they're now running loose because Mr. Cordray deserted his post.
I finished that payday lending rule before I left, and I was late into this race because I felt bound and determined and conscientiously obligated to finish that rule and make it law of the land, which it is now. But when you were in the General Assembly, you voted for the initial law that created payday lending in Ohio. So now to talk about how you're going to defend us against payday lending and the five payday lenders that exploit people in your community, they never would have gotten started if you hadn't voted for that law in the first place.
Some familiar criticism there from Dennis Kucinich. Poll shows that both these guys are basically tied. Nearly half of Ohio Democrats still undecided.
Yeah, so you can see that this debate, you know, Joe Schiavone was there and Bill O'Neill was there, but it was Cordray versus Kucinich in this debate. They really are going after each other. It's not personal. They seem to be going after their policy and their resumes, but they are definitely eyeing each other with them so close in the polls.
Kucinich also, once again, went after Richard Cordray for his record on defending Ohio gun laws. Cordray needs to cut into Kucinich's lead in Northeast Ohio, bringing back Cleveland's troubled past, the Burning River bankruptcy. It's all part of this strategy.
Yeah, Dennis Kucinich remains very popular among Democrats in the Cleveland area. Richard Cordray, you know, trying to remind folks that things weren't all rosy when Dennis Kucinich was mayor. It was a long time ago. That's one way to cut into his advantage in Northeast Ohio. But Dennis Kucinich was wearing on his lapel a button with the letter F, and he was proudly saying that he has an F from the NRA, again, highlighting his difference with Richard Cordray on the gun issue. Richard Cordray had an A rating at one point from the NRA and does not support the same gun restrictions that Dennis Kucinich does.
What criticism from Kucinich at this point against Cordray do you think carries more weight? Is it him tying Cordray to the NRA, or do you think it is him criticizing Cordray for quote, abandoning lower-income Ohioans by leaving the CFPB?
Well, I think the guns is that's the reason why this race is as close as it is. I think that Dennis Kucinich jumped on the gun issue right after the Florida shootings, said he wants an assault weapons ban. Richard Cordray would not go that far. The Democrats really do want a ban on assault-style weapons, so he's able to put Richard Cordray on the defensive right away. What you saw this week was Richard Cordray go on the offensive, and people were wondering if the mild-mannered Cordray could do that. He showed in this debate that he can. They have a public debate, I believe, next week in the Cincinnati area. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
On the Republican side, Mike DeWine might have a big lead, but he's not acting like it.
No, his campaign has bought $1 million in ad time on TV stations all around the state. It's not the negative ad that he was airing earlier. He doesn't call Mary Taylor a slacker. In fact, he doesn't even mention Mary Taylor.
It's not quite MaryDoesNotWork.com.
No, Mary Taylor does not even appear in this ad.
I want to tell you about my husband, Mike. We met in the first grade, and he's my very best friend. We've been blessed with 8 children and lots of wonderful grandkids. The hardest part of our life was losing our daughter, Becky, in a car accident. She was just 22 years old. It made us realize how precious life is, and it drives Mike to make a difference every day. When Mike sees a child who is struggling or in danger, he thinks that could be his child. When he sees rapists and drug dealers brutalizing innocent people, he locks them up. When drug companies flood our state.
That's the Mike DeWine I know. When I hear that ad, that's what I think of with Mike DeWine. I don't think of the nasty negative ads that he aired in recent weeks. Do you think he's responding to any public pressure or any polling that his earlier ads against Mary Taylor did not work?
Well, I think he did get a lot of blowback from even Republican Party insiders for the harshness of his attacks on Mary Taylor.
Very out of character for him. He's a family man. He hosts these ice cream socials.
But that's an image he likes to portray, and longtime Mike DeWine watchers remember that he can get
pretty cutthroat.
Pretty tough. He once, when he was running against John Glenn, ran an ad that said, "What on earth has John Glenn done?" So it's a great line, but you know, it just showed you that he's willing to take on an American hero. He's certainly willing to take on Mary Taylor. But this ad does two things. One, it gets his message out there that he is a champion of conservative values, which appeals to the Republican primary voter. But it also is a nice introduction to folks who may not be aware of him. He's got great name ID, but also lays the ground. So it lays the groundwork for his eventual fall campaign, expected fall campaign against his Democratic opponent.
Taylor's still going negative. She's not easing up.
Yes, she has to. That's her only chance. She has to go negative, calling Mike DeWine D.C. DeWine, saying he's a liberal politician, tying him to Hillary Clinton, saying he's soft on immigration. That's really her only hope, is to galvanize the far right, the Trump supporters in the Republican primary against Mike DeWine, but she's got a pretty steep hill to climb.
And that will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster.
We should probably remind people what Snollygoster means. It's been a couple of weeks. Snollygoster is a 19th century political term that means dishonest politician.
It does.
In case you didn't catch it the first episode.
Yeah, and you can listen to the first episode for an interview with Mark Forsyth, an English author who gave us a full rundown on the word, the full history of the word.
It has Columbus roots. Believe it or not.
And that will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. Be sure to tell your friends about us. You can also find news from the 89.7 NPR news team using the WOSU Public Media mobile app. You can also listen to 89.7 live by asking your smart speaker to play WOSU. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. This has been Snollygoster.